The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Congressman-elect Ben Kleine gets sworn in tomorrow, January 3rd, Republican 6th District of Virginia, and he's representing the 6th District, which is a sprawling area of central and southwest Virginia. It goes from Lynchburg to Roanoke, and he'd be replacing the retired Bob Goodlatte. Congressman-elect Ben Kleine, tomorrow I can call you Congressman Ben Kleine. Great to have you, sir.
John, it's great to be with you, Happy anniversary. It's been a great 8 years. I've been honored to be able to say I've been joined you over the past several. I don't think I've made it eight, but you've deserved the accolades you're getting, and hope you get to celebrate a little bit.
Well, you know what, Ben? I always enjoyed going to your office. I remember when I was in Lynchburg that time we met, you came in and cut a few ads for us, and whenever I was in Richmond, I would knock on your door and you would just step out of the meeting and talk to me. Always accessible, and I always appreciated that. You know, when you get to Congress, here's my fear. You get there and you just become part of the swamp. You know, you get there and, you know, you got to raise money and you get the lobbyists going in every day. And Ben Kleine is the opposite of that. So how do you self-protect yourself from not becoming one of them?
Well, that's a legitimate fear, and that's something that I've seen happen to a lot of good people. They go in there, and they get just kind of sucked in by the swamp, and they become part of the whole system. And I would just say, look at my history in Richmond, 16 years in the House of Delegates, and arguably getting more conservative as I move along, head of the equivalent of the Freedom Caucus down there, and fighting my own leadership as often as I'm fighting the Democrats. And so I'm anxious to, I always say I'm going up to Washington to join the fight, not the club. And so I'm anxious to get up there and join the fighters. And there are some good ones up there and be a part of the Freedom Caucus and get some things done as well as stop some of the more egregious things from happening that Nancy Pelosi is going to be pushing.
Well, look, you're going to be right in the middle of it, and you get sworn in tomorrow. Now, I know Denver Riggleman also getting sworn in. His party is at the Library of Congress. Where's yours?
It's in the Rayburn office building in the foyer there. They must have thought I'd be a troublemaker, so they put me right near the exits so they could, I guess, kick us out faster when we cause trouble. But So we'll be in the Rayburn Foyer. Got a couple hundred folks from the 6th Congressional District coming up by bus, and I couldn't think of a better way to start than being surrounded by good conservative friends who helped me at last fall, and get to celebrate with them as we get sworn in, and alongside my good friend Denver, who's going to be down the hall from me in the Longworth House office building just down the hall.
And Ben, what time tomorrow is your event for open to the public if people want to come in and wish you well?
Well, we would ask you to let us know. So you can email us at info@benkleine.com and let us know that, or go on Facebook and let us know you're going to be coming so we can budget for you. We got lunch planned and it'd be great to have as many folks as would like to come. But we'll be there in the morning before we go over to get sworn in, around 11. And then after we get sworn in, during the swearing in, we're going to have TV so that folks can watch it. And then afterward, we're going to have tours of the Capitol and tours of my office. And you can see what number one in this lottery for freshmen will get you. essentially get you the most square footage. And you get to actually have a window with a tree outside. But it's a good opportunity for me to, if thank the folks as they come through, and then buses will be hitting the road around 3.
All right, so if you want to attend, info@benkline.com, and I'm going to attend. Do I have to do the info at Ben Klein, or can you just pass
it
on?
No, you get a special pass. You get John, pass. You get special treatment.
Well, thank you.
You're part of this. I'm going to set you aside from all the fake news. You're one of the few who actually broadcasts the real thing and the truth, and so we're going to give you special access.
Well, thank you, Congressman-elect Ben Klein. I appreciate that. I'll be at the Rayburn Foyer tomorrow. My show ends at 10. I think I got an interview with somebody after that, and I'll be over around noon, and hopefully I can get there in time to see you get sworn in on TV. We're looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So now let's get to business. So you get sworn in tomorrow. Okay, rah-rah. Then you come in, you got a government shutdown. Nancy Pelosi says she's got bills going through the House, doesn't expect any Republicans to back it, doesn't care, says who cares. No wall, no funding. We're going to open the government. And that's that. What's the answer here?
Well, I worry that there aren't enough backbones collectively in the House or in the Senate to withstand the swamp fighting for its paychecks. And that's part of the problem. I mean, you know, it's the swamp fighting to survive. It's their survival at stake here in this shutdown. And you would think, just looking at it from a politically strategic standpoint, that Republicans would have the leverage because, you know, the government is mainly made up of the base of the other side that want their, you know, that want their operations for their government, that they would give the president his wall and give us, those of us fighting for border security, what we want, a secure border that includes a wall that that is going to address the problem of illegal immigration, which is one of the reasons that I got elected in the first place. So, you know, but we seem to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory every time. And I'm hopeful, and I'm optimistic, but I'm also a realist. And when you got people like Mitt Romney out there slamming the president before he even gets sworn in as a senator, disappointing. So I'm not sure the Senate will hold. I hope they will, but I'm not sure they will.
Well, listen, they have to hold, but you bring up a good point, Congressman-elect Ben Klein, Republican 6th District, Virginia, that Mitt Romney hasn't even taken office. He hasn't even gotten sworn in. He's already doing op-eds. Mitt Romney, who took us down to the feet in 2012, Bain Capital, he outsourced jobs, part of the donor class, part of the gangster bankers on Wall Street. I mean, why do we have, like, right out of the bat, we're in the middle of a negotiation and you get Mitt Romney doing an op-ed slamming Trump, who's trying to do the right thing in order to get border security in the in the United States, who we have a sovereign country. I mean, you have to get up on January 2nd and deal with this guy. But you're right. That is epidemic of what you're going to deal with in the U.S. Senate going forward, right?
Yeah. And Utah is a great conservative state, and they elect great conservatives like Mike Lee, who's a fantastic senator who I can't wait to get to work with. But to come in and for your first order of business to be to write an op-ed for the Washington Post slamming the president's moral credibility is just misplaced priorities. It's just, I would hope that Romney would put his knowledge and his experience to better use, maybe in helping to address this economic situation we've got right now. But instead, he's just decided to go off on tangent slamming our president. And that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to dealing with Washington. And I'm looking forward to working with great conservatives like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and hopefully trying to keep everybody focused on the priorities at hand, which is, helping our president, making sure that we can drain the swamp, making sure that we can balance the budget, making sure we can get our fiscal house in order. And that's what I'm aiming to do from day one.
We're with Ben Klein, who is vowing that he's not going to be part of the swamp when he gets up there. Denver Riggleman has said the same thing. One of the other issues, besides being one of the swamp monsters that just engulf you in there, Ben, as you know, is being out of touch or being aloof. I mean, one of the criticisms of my friend Dave Brett in the 7th District, why he got beat, is that he went up there. He certainly didn't become part of the swamp. No question. I mean, Dave was battling those people every day, would get on my show every Monday and tell you all the nonsense that went on every single day. But he got a lot of criticism for not really connecting back with his district. And, you know, we all have to learn from that, because I thought Dave deserved to get reelected. But all the feedback I got, people that abandoned him said, you know, he just didn't really come back and talk to us. How do you ensure that that is not going to happen when you've got such a big district?
Well, you got to grab the bull by the horns. And so when I got into office, people said, you've got to be accessible. You got to be available. So I said, listen, I've had town hall meetings in my state house district for 16 years.
Right.
And I've gotten liberals in my face, you know, confronting me about their priorities at my town hall meetings for 16 years.
Right.
And we talk. And you know, that's how we resolve it. So I had 4 town hall meetings immediately back in December. Mm-hmm. And I had them in the 4 localities that I lost. Mm-hmm. I only lost 4 of the 19 localities. Mm-hmm. But I had them in Roanoke City, Lexington City, Stanton City, and Harrisonburg City. And you know what? We talked. Mm-hmm. And I got to hear from them about the issues that were important to them, and I disagreed with them. Mm-hmm. You know what? Once you talk through your positions with people, they appreciate that you're willing to listen to them, because mm-hmm. a lot of it is just about listening when it comes to reaching out in your district. So I'm going to continue to have town hall meetings, and I'm going to continue to listen. And that may not win over the liberals. They may continue to, you know, want to protest and disrupt. Some of them do, but hopefully fewer of them will see the need to disrupt when they realize that I'm going to be out there listening, and I'm going to be out there working just as hard for them when it comes to helping with constituent services. I may not agree with them on the issues, but I'll go to bat for them if they're not getting, you know, addressed by a government agency or something like that. That's an important part of the work we do. I don't want to represent the whole district, but taking it to the district and making sure that the liberals understand that you're not going to run and just refuse to hold town hall meetings or refuse to be accessible, that's an important part of it.
I just love what you said, the fact that you had 4 town hall meetings in December, all in the 4 cities or all in the 4 areas you lost in the general election. Lexington City, Harrisonburg City, Roanoke City, and what was it, Stanton? What was the other one?
Yes, Stanton City.
Stanton City. I mean, the fact that you went there, because I have the same approach. I mean, if you can't have a conversation, you just can't ever you might not solve something through a conversation. You might not reach agreement, but it is absolutely guaranteed if you don't talk to somebody, you're never going to get there. And so you have to understand what other people are saying. And it doesn't mean you're going to get swayed or you're going to cave, but you have to understand the other person's perspective. And I think the right thing. And look, all you can do is learn. I think both you and Denver have to learn from the mistakes that were made by Dave, because Dave was a great congressman and he did a lot of great things, but he didn't get back to his district to satisfy his constituents. And as a result, he got beat. And I think you've got to learn from that. And it sounds like, Ben Klein, you're well on the way. I can just say from a personal standpoint, I've known you for a long time. You've returned every phone call I've ever made, to return every text I've ever sent. You've had an open door policy every time I've come in there. I've got 1 minute. Let's switch to Virginia. You're now out of the House of Delegates. Can Kirk Cox hold the House in 2019?
Kirk Cox can hold the House in 2019. I think that a lot of the districts that were lost in 2017 can be won back. I believe that we've got some good candidates already running up in Northern Virginia districts, and I think that we can win those back, and a couple in the Beach area, a couple in Richmond suburbs, and hold the House. So I feel good about that. I'm going to be working hard in the 6th to make sure that that there is no weak spot in the 6th district. You know, there are a couple of districts that they like to point out, well, Corey Stewart barely won this or didn't win this, or, you know, Tim Kaine won this state house district or whatever. Well, that doesn't apply when you're dealing with great individual delegates like Tony Wilt in Harrisonburg. Tony Wilt's going to win his district.
All right, I got to take off
because he is responsive.
Ben, I'm out of time. I got to take off. John Fredericks Radio Network. More information. What's your website, Ben?
BenKline.com.
Joining us now live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Dave Bossy. Dave, again, the author, best-selling New York Times. He's a best-selling author now. Guy's like does everything. Now he's a best-selling author. Let Trump Beat Trump. That was our first book on the campaign. New York Times bestseller list. Now the must-read of all time. Trump's Enemies by Corey Lewandowski and Dave Bossy. Dave serving as the deputy campaign manager for the Trump for President campaign. I was the chairman of Virginia, and even though we lost Virginia, we came within 4.5 points. And during the campaign, Dave only fussed at me one time. So I think that's pretty good because Dave's pretty tough, and he's with us now. Dave Bossy. Dave, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, good morning. Clearly, I wasn't tough enough. If you can only remember one time, June, that's a problem.
I know. You only fussed at me once that I can remember. Now, there might have been other times behind the scenes, but I only got the phone call one time. And and I said to myself after that phone call, I'm like, I don't want to get another one of those phone calls. So I think I'm going to do exactly what he says.
And we lost Virginia, so.
I know, right?
Somebody's to blame, and I'm not sure who.
Well, look, you know, we made Biden and Tim Kaine had to come to Virginia on Monday instead of going to Wisconsin or Milwaukee or Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia, absolutely.
Yeah, they had to.
We
tied them up. So I'll put that feather in my cap, Dave. But look, Trump's Enemies, I mean, this is a must-read for anybody. You can buy it on B. Dalton, your favorite bookstore. You can go to Amazon, or you can just go to my website, johnfredericksradio.com. Boom. It's right there. You can just click on it, buy it. You're good to go. Dave, we were a major, major advocate of you being chief of staff. I'd like to see you go in the White House. Any chance of that happening? I know you feel that you can serve the president best on the outside, but I saw what you did on the inside. Any chance that you might go in there and maybe straighten this out?
Well, John, I appreciate you know, the kind words, and I appreciate the confidence. And you know, just like everybody inside the White House, you serve at the pleasure of the White House, which means he can bring anybody in he wants. It's his decision. I am not looking for a job. I'm the president of Citizens United, and, you know, I'm on Fox News, and I'm writing books, and I'm having a great time helping the president from the outside. But if he chooses that he needs me to come on the inside, I'm open to helping him in whatever capacity he thinks is best. And so if that's coming on the inside and helping him get this White House in order, then I think that's a fine place for me to be. But I'm not the person to make that call, and I'm not out there advocating myself for anything. I just think that I'm happy to help him. He needs good people, you know, who support his agenda around him, and that's what we've been lacking for the last 2 years. We've had a lot of that infighting that has not been beneficial to the president, but more importantly to the American people and to the agenda that got him elected in the first place.
I think you're right. There's no question that he campaigned on an agenda, and it's amazing, isn't it, Dave Bossy, that when the president actually attempts to implement the campaign promises he made, that Washington is shocked to all hell. I mean, they just can't believe it. Whether it's Syria.
Look, this is why we call it the swamp. That's why the American people fundamentally distrust and dislike politicians. Why? Because they run around the state, your state, your district, the country, and they make these promises. They make promise after promise, and nobody actually believes them. Nobody actually believes they're going to do what they say or say what they mean. And that's the difference here is you have a guy who is not a career politician. He is still an outsider. And that's what gets them. He says what he means and means what he says. And that's the difference maker. And that's why Washington continuously gets shocked is he lives up to the promises that he made to people. And that's a fundamental difference between him and the Nancy Pelosi, the crying Chuck Schumers of the world. You know, they don't care. Everything's about politics to them. This guy just wants to make a difference every day. He wants to make things better every day. And he doesn't really even care, you know, who gets the credit. I know the left loves to think that that's not true, but it is true.
And you know what's amazing is the hand-wringing that goes on in this town, Dave Bossie, every time the president attempts to implement a campaign promise. I mean, the most – two examples now where he campaigned for – 2 years on building a wall. Now everybody's shocked that he's actually holding to that. He campaigned for 2 years on getting out of these foreign entanglements in the Middle East, especially getting out of Syria, which he said made no sense. And like you said the other day, you know, we were supposed to be there for 6 months. We've been there for an extended period of time. It's time to get out. We have no more mission there. And yet everybody's going absolutely ballistic over it, like this was some iconoclastic decision he made on his own. He campaigned on it, Dave, for 2 years.
Look, you know, there are good arguments, and there's a great debate to be had over the content of the decision to get into Syria, to get out of Syria. There are good people on both sides of this issue, military experts, strategic advisors, you know, of the president that are on both sides of this issue, but good men and women all. But the president gets to make the decision. That's the difference, is that it's his call. And only in this administration do you have a situation where these people think that they can undo a president's decision or that they can, you know, in effect, stop his decision. You know, presidents make the decisions, and the rest of us implement them. That's what it's about. He got 60-plus million votes. Nobody else did. Mm-hmm. So you know, it is a situation where he's not being served by folks who want to undercut him. And you get these generals who, you know, these retired guys, you know, who, again, can think that there's, you know, reasons for us to be in places. But it just is, it's not the right way to go about the business of running this government and having, you know, the McChrystals of the world and, and even the Mattises of the world. You know, speak out against the president. I mean, it's one thing to advise him behind closed doors, and that's he wants to hear all sides of the issue. He does, and he wants everybody's input. But then it's decision time, and it's one person who gets to make the decision. And that's where we have, you know, a problem consistently, you know, inside this White House.
John Frederick's Radio Network, Trucking the Truth Across America. We're live in the swamp. As always, we're with Dave Bossie. Dave is the president of Citizens United. He was the deputy campaign manager for the Trump for President campaign in the general election. He engineered that campaign to victory, as you know, the big upset. Also, Dave is a best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author. Two books, Let Trump Beat Trump, that was number one. Trump's Enemies just came out about a month ago. Absolute must-read. There's an interview in there that Dave Bossie and Corey Lewandowski do with the president in the Oval Office that is just a classic. Have to buy it. Have to read it. You get it at Amazon, B. Dalton, or just go to my website, johnfredericksradio.com, and the book is right there. You can just click on it. You're good to go. Dave, you've advised the president for a long time. Certainly during the campaign, you were there for some of the toughest times, as we all remember. If you were in the White House right now and you were advising the president and you were, say, had a chief of staff type role, strategic advisor, you're on the phone with Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi. They're taking power today and they're saying not a dime for the wall, nothing, zero, jump in a lake. What would your advice be to the president and also back to the Democrats?
You know, the first thing I would do is ask, Senator Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, what it is they want in return for.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday called on the U.S. to recognize Israeli sovereignty of the disputed Golan Heights. Netanyahu announced that he and Bolton would visit the region on Monday, weather permitting, standing next to U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton before working dinner in Jerusalem. Netanyahu says, "When you're there, you'll be able to understand perfectly why we will never leave the Golan Heights." Israel has held the area since 1967. A Texas sheriff says authorities now believe that a man in a red pickup who was being sought in the shooting death of a 7-year-old black girl was actually just a witness. Authorities said Sunday that the killing of Jasmine Barnes appears to have been a case of mistaken identity, not a racially motivated attack as her family feared. More details at srnnews.com.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to ReliefFactor.com.
Hi, it's Mac with Baker Glass. If you're having trouble finding a clear option for that new shower enclosure or a replacement for that fog glass, then call the Baker Boys or find us at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better. Hi, this is Mac with Baker Glass, where we use our more than 32 years of experience to provide a complete glass service to all of our customers and a clear choice for you. See for yourself at BakerGlassInc.com. That's BakerGlassInc.com. Baker Glass, no one treats you better.
Hey, this is Anita Hiles with Rapid Fire Real Estate. I am so excited to announce that Wednesday, January 9th at 5 p.m., we will be live with Dave Ramsey Solutions, Chris Hogan. Chris is an expert when it comes to mortgages, healthcare, and investing. He tours the country teaching money management classes, helps clients develop a financial strategy, and is releasing a new book, Everyday Millionaires. He is going to be giving these books away during our show, so you're going to want to tune in January 9th at 5 p.m. here on Rapid Fire Real Estate with Anita Hiles.
Homeowners, now is the season to be thinking about your roof, because all it takes is one storm to turn a small roof problem into a major leak. If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. You'll get reliable service and installation. And Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. So if you need a new roof, don't wait till the next storm. Call Sears Roofing for a free in-home consultation. Call 1-888-990-2233. That's 1-888-990-2233. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now. 1-888-990-2233. 1-888-990-2233. Sears.
So my dilemma on this New Year's 8th year anniversary show is, for the Senate nomination for Dick Blackseed, who's retiring, do we back David Ramadan, who is going to run, because he's the best chance for the Republicans to win and hold the state Senate, even though I think Sturdivant's going to lose and it might not matter? Or do I just say, you know what, David, you drive me bat crazy because you're a hopeless Mitt Romney never Trumper and you drive me nuts, but you're my friend, so I'm going to back somebody else that's not as hostile to the president, who will then lose. Because no question, David has the best chance to win. Right? And then I would have to rally the Trump base to back the guy that hates him. You see what a difficult position this puts me in, Mike? Right? So basically, just over this, My 2019 resolution to stop drinking just went out the window with David Ramadan. And he's joining us now. Former House of Delegates. Former House of Delegates member and hopeless never Trumper, David Ramadan, Republican. David, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. May it be a very blessed and prosperous year for all and for our already great United States of America.
Okay, David, that's such a little... See, even your New Year's wish has to be a little Trump dig, right? This is why you drive me nuts. But I love you. So it's like, hey, listen, it's a tough relationship.
Let me tell you something. Should I decide to run for the seat?
You're going
to
run. Come on.
You have no choice but to support me. And that is not for political purposes, not because of all the preamble that you put up, but because the furloin will make you support me. It's hands down, I'm her favorite. So you have no choice. However.
Okay, she runs the company. I have no response to that because it's true. She is, yep. The Fraulein is going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on me to back you for state senate. Tremendous amount of pressure. No question about it. She
happy
is.
Wife.
She's going to put, happy yes, life. Because she thinks you're.
Happy home. And you're going to support me regardless should I decide to run. However, there are a lot to consider. And there are some great people out there. What the district needs is a Republican that can win. All jokes aside, all pro-Trump, never-Trump aside, it's not Trump that runs this district, and it's not Trump that wins this district, and it's not about Trump in this district. It's about fighting highway robbery tolls on the greenway. It's about making sure the education system is there for what people want it to be. It's about reflecting the high percentage, something around, I haven't looked at statistics recently, but you know, my former House of Delegates seat was mostly in this district, so the numbers are very close. But there's a good 25-30% of immigrant votes in that district, and their priorities and what they look at and what they need and reaching out to them creating relationships with them. That's what this district needs. Not somebody who's flying to Syria and dealing with Assad and calling him the champion of human rights and champion of women's rights. Give me a break. I put out an email yesterday before this news to my mass fellowship that I still have in the area on the Greenway issue. We're fighting another highway Greenway robbery that delegates Bell and Reed had made a backdoor deal with them to give them guaranteed increases until 2056, 38 years of guaranteed increases to a road that already is the highest, most expensive road in the world. You drive 1 mile and you get charged $5, $6,
mm-hmm.
or the 14 miles. That's what people care about, not what Trump does, and this has nothing to do with Trump. So if the Republican Party needs to win the seat, the Republican Party needs to nominate somebody like David Ramadan, not necessarily David Ramadan. There are a lot of great people out there. Supervisor Matt Letourneau is a great candidate for this. Supervisor Ron Meyer is a great candidate for this. And they reflect the important issues of their constituencies. And that's what we need to be thinking about. Otherwise, just hand it to the Democrats. Another like Dick Black person with the seat. Don't even bother run a campaign at that time. Just hand it to the Democrats and save the money.
We're with David Ramadan, former House of Delegates member, Virginia Republican, probably has the best chance of anybody, if he's the nominee to replace Dick Black, to hold that seat for the Republicans, which is slipping away. Dick Black could not win that seat, and we had told everybody that. So basically, I had written the state senate to the Democrats and handing the majority gavel to the godfather, Dick Saslaw, and I told Bill Stanley to start, you know, playing ice with Saslaw, right. Mail him candy and things of that nature, because if he's going to get that highway done, he's going to need Saslaw. I'm not sure Sturtevant can win, so I still think Sasso's got the upper hand. But Ramanan, the only Republican in my judgment that has any chance of holding that seat. But our dilemma is simple. I mean, David Ramanan is a hopeless, drive me bat crap crazy, never Trumper. And so
David Ramanan is a conservative who was a Republican decades before Donald Trump ever was, continues to be a conservative with an A rating from the NRA and an A rating from the American Conservative Unions, ratings that Trump will never have. And my differences with him is on his character. My differences with him is on his big mouth. My differences with him is on the stature that he put this already great United States at. You know my love for this country. You know my American dream. My differences with him is on that, not personal, and not on most policy, although on some policy. No conservative in his right mind will put the trade policies that we're seeing today. No conservative in his right mind who wants to grow the Republican Party and call it a big tent, as we have tried to do for years, comes in and puts these immigration policies that are now. So those differences are real differences, and we really ought to be having a real discussion about them, John, is for the future of this country. If we, as conservatives, lack the capability to govern because of a crazy one person or not, whether you love him, whether he's your dad or mine, whether he's your brother or mine, whether he's or she is, and I hope we do nominate a she to the United States presidency as a Republican first, or elect, not just nominate, whether she is one of our best friends or a sister or a cousin, it doesn't matter. What matters is, in 20 years from now, this country will become a minority-majority country. And if we conservatives want to be able to continue to govern, we need to be able to do so by including the minority, which is going to become a majority in this country. And what Donald Trump has done is alienated and take us back 30, 40, 50 years to the work that many people have been doing in this country on that issue.
Now, yeah, I guess giving everybody a tax cut, and I guess providing better jobs and better pay and higher wages and a better chance to support their family and to move up the economic ladder. I guess that's how he's turned his back on minorities. See, this is why we're not on the same page. And I don't know what you call a conservative. Maybe it's not me. You talk about trade. I'm a protectionist. Been so. I fought NAFTA, TPP, the Korean trade agreement, the disastrous deal we had with the European Union for 30 years. I've fought that. So I'm a protectionist. I believe in his trade policies. I'm an immigration hawk. I don't think if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. You have a landmass. And so, as Milton Friedman said, your conservative hero, you can either have a welfare state or you can have open borders. You can't do both. That's what we have. Right now, no. Do you know that the... Let me just finish.
Who ever said we want open borders?
You!
Who ever said
you want open borders? You want open borders, David?
Find me. I don't want open borders.
Sure you do.
But I want protected borders. I've been saying, go back to my... Go back and search my immigration debates on NPR with Kojo Namdi from 10 years ago. I never, ever said that. On the contrary, I used to go around and say we want closed borders. But there's a difference what a closed border is. Of course a nation needs a border. A closed border does not mean a big, beautiful, shiny wall, concrete, and I want billions of dollars for it. No. A border means a border. And a border could be electronic and could be fenced, could be open in some areas where there's no, it could be just drones that's monitoring it. We want a secure border. However, we are also a nation of laws. And when you're talking about nation of laws, let's say laws. The current immigration law says when you arrive and apply for asylum, you're a legal applicant.
Oh, point. You know that that's being like exploited, David. David, come on. You're sounding
law.
Like Nancy
don't
Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
That we need to stop them at the border and separate them and know they can't process. That's what the law says.
Unbelievable.
What Congress for. Go change the law.
We're trying to change it, all right? But you can't change. Look, they're abusing, these migrants are abusing that law. They've got lawyers down there giving them a script. And here's the thing, David. The Mexican government offered 2,000 work visas to these migrants from Honduras. 2,000. Jobs and work visas. They have to. Let me finish. They offer 2,000 one-year work visas. Job, right? Work visa. Mexico. Now, if you're fleeing whatever it is that you say you're fleeing, okay, and you want asylum, Well, Mexico's offering 2,000 of them. You know how many applicants they got? 190. 190 out of 2,000. They don't want a job in Mexico. They want to come to the United States and go on welfare. They don't want to work in Mexico. So the whole thing's baloney, and the new Mexican government, AMLO, snuffed it out. He said, I've got openings for jobs. Here's 2,000 of them. He got 190 applicants right in the caravan. Why?
John, it's not our concern what Mexico does. Our concern is, as a country, we have a law that says anybody can apply for political asylum. Once they do, they obtain illegal status until their case has been adjudicated. Adjudicate them. If they're lying, ship their asses back. If they're not, welcome them in. But we don't demonize them. We don't do the crazy stuff we're doing. We don't say, no, we're not going to accept your application. If you don't want to have political asylum in the country, go change the law.
David, are you going to run or not?
Good to be back. I'm not the only one who can win the seat. There are great guys out there that can win the seat as well. The idea is to make sure we have people running, or we have a candidate running, and really I would hope that everybody would line up behind a certain candidate that reflects the constituency of that district, that understands Eastern Loudoun, that understands the important issues for constituents of Ashburn and South Riding and Sterling, people like Supervisor Matt Letourneau, like Supervisor Ron Myers, are people that are in touch with their constituency. They understand it.
Give me a break. Ron Myers is not going to. David, I love your inclusive, like all Republicans are great. Look, Ron Myers is a fine young man, right? Ron Myers is not going to win that seat. Anybody that you mention is not going to win that seat. This is Loudoun County, David. It's going blue. The only candidate on the Republican side, and I'm saying this right on the air, that I know that has any chance of winning that seat against a Democrat that is going to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars is you. That's it. If somebody else can win that, so Ron Meyer can't win that seat or anybody else, right? This is going blue. You're the only person. Ron Meyer can't win that seat. You know what? He can't win that seat.
Their efforts into it.
Can't win the seat. You're the only guy that can win.
Behind whoever the candidate is, there's a big chance that they can keep that seat.
Blah, blah, blah. I know you have to give the Republican line and toe the line, but here's the dilemma that we have.
I'm not telling. I'm taking on. Just said you spent the whole 5 minutes of the section telling everybody how I challenged the number one Republican in the country.
Ron
I'm not doing the Republican line.
Ron Meyer's not going to win that seat. Look, it's.
I call Trump out every day, multiple times.
I know you drive me nuts.
I'm a Republican.
Here's the choice. If you're a Republican in Virginia, here's your choice, right? It's Ramadan driving you crazy every day, doing never Trumper stuff, or Saslaw, the Godfather, as majority leader. That's your choice, and it's not an easy choice to make. It's tough. It's a tough choice.
Hey, Dick Saslaw is quite entertaining. We all know that. What is going to be his saying on this race this time? Remember, he was going to jump off the roof for something. He was going to go to Canada 1 year for something else. So what's going to be his prediction on this race? That'll be interesting to hear.
Well, I'm going to find out because...
I hope to God that Saslaw never becomes the majority leader of that Senate. And we keep that majority in the hands of the good Republicans that are down there, many of whom are good friends.
Well, David, it's going to be fun. The Fräulein and I are having dinner with Dick Black in a couple of weeks in Richmond. He invited us to dinner because he still owes me dinner for the Trump victory 2 years ago. It's the last bet that I've still not collected. And I'm one of these people that, you know what, you got to pay your gambling debts, man. That's what my father told me. My father was a gambler, gambled on baseball every day from March until October. And he said, before you pay your rent, you got to pay your gambling debt. Got to pay up. So finally I'm collecting from Saslaw after harassing him for 2 years. But that's why I put on all this weight, because all these people have to come and buy me dinner all the time. But look, here's our dilemma. And I'm going to open the phone lines up because David's a friend of mine. 888-480-JOHN, 888-480-5646. Dick Sazlaw doesn't want him to run. The Godfather doesn't want him to be the nominee. The Terry McAuliffe doesn't want him to be the nominee. Nobody in the Democratic sphere wants this guy to be the nominee because, look, they're already celebrating taking over the Senate because there was no way that Dick Black would win again, and they knew it. So they're going to put up a candidate. It's going to be a primary. They'll spend, I don't know, $700,000. And the only person they can't beat is David Ramadan. And so he's going to drive them nuts like he drives me nuts. So I don't know what to do. What do you think? 888-480-JOHN. 888-480-JOHN. Coupled with the fact the guy is like, if he campaigns, you don't want to campaign against him. You don't want to debate him. This guy's a beast. I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes. He's a beast. And you're going to carry your old district big. Besides, David, I never saw anybody work the Indian crowd like you in my life. And there's a lot of Indian Americans in that district, right?
Yes. The Indian American community is the biggest immigrant community in that district. Look, I reached out to them. I opened up the doors. I talked to them. It doesn't take much, John. All it takes is listening to people, joining them at their events, talking to them, figuring out what their priorities are, and then doing it. And I was very proud to get the Indian vote, mostly a vote that votes on the other side, votes for the Democrats. They voted for me in both of my elections. They put me over the top. We passed in Virginia the Diwali Day, the last Saturday of every October, recognizing the biggest Indian event that takes place around the world. And we were the first state in the nation to do so. And therefore, we listened. Therefore, we delivered. And that's how you gain votes. And that's how you gain communities into the GOP. And that Indian vote carried over. Dick Black benefited from that vote because they voted for him as well after I introduced him. Barbara Comstock, of course, this last run didn't work out for her, but the previous run, she benefited from that vote as well because the Indian community came out for her. So once you gain these communities, and as long as you don't aggravate them, as long as you don't call them names, as long as you don't piss them off like Donald Trump does, they will remain loyal to you, and they were loyal to me, and I will always appreciate that.
So here's the other dilemma we have. If you're a Trump supporter in Virginia and you're thinking about David Ramadan, here's the other dilemma we have, because he is going to drive you nuts. But, you know, if he's in the state Senate, right, this has very little national implications here. It's really about Virginia. And, you know, if he's in the Senate, he's going to vote with the Republican majority if they hold the Senate, if somehow Sturta Van hangs on, which is below 50-50, in my judgment. But he's going to do the right thing. All right, I just got a text here from the Froilan, my wife, who said, you know, I love David. I think he'd be great in the state Senate. Plus, that keeps him out of Trump's hair. So, I mean, there's a way to, you know, there's a way to spin this. Now, let me just tell everybody this story. So 7 years ago, we were in Washington, D.C., and we were thinking of moving there because we had a station there, and that's kind of where our business was headed. So Ann said, okay, let's move there. Let's look at houses and stuff, areas to live. So we went to Loudoun County. That's the area she wanted. So she's in Chesapeake, and I'm in Loudoun County, wherever neighborhood we were in. And I said, honey, I think I found the house. And I sent her the pictures, and I sent her all this stuff. And I'm like, I think we found the perfect spot. It's in our price range. The high school coming up that we want, middle school, Freedom Middle School, everything is there. I think this is perfect for us. Right? So you would think she'd say, great, you know, book a meeting. I'll come up and see it. Know what she says to me? She says, whose house district is it in? I'm like, how the hell do I know? She's like, no, find out if it's in Ramadan's district. So I'm like, I don't know what district. I don't even know the area. So I call his office, and I get somebody answer the phone, and I give the address. And I'm like, I got to find out if this is in the district. And so the person, your intern or whatever, puts me on hold, comes back and said, no, you're about a half mile out. It ends here. The house is not in the district. It's in somebody else's. So I called my wife back and I'm like, well, we're in this other person's house of delegates district. Like, who cares? Not Ramadan. And she says to me, scratch it off the list. I'm like, what?
Anne is the best, and she certainly is the best thing that ever happened to you, my friend.
I know. She says, if I'm going to go to Northern Virginia, I'm going to live in Ramadan's house district. Find a house in his district. I'm like, who the hell cares? So that's what I got to deal with. All right, I got a phone call here. Slumlord George, you're on the phone with me and David Ramadan.
Hello. Hello, John and David. Hey, I wanted to ask you this. It sounds like David isn't against open borders, and I want to ask him this. You know, what value do you think these people are bringing to this country other than being resource suckers? It's not like it's a group of engineers, doctors, people that are helping this country. They're coming here to get away from some oppression. They're coming here to get on welfare. And I'm not saying they're not here to work necessarily, but I just don't see the value in these folks. If you want to come into this country, you need to come into this country legally. You need to go through the avenues that you have to go through involving learning some of our processes, our laws, our language. What value do we have with these open borders? That's what I want to hear, David. What is your stance on this?
Let me, oh my gosh, so much to cover. We're going to need another section for this, just for this question, John. But let me quickly say, first,
give him
my email. I'll be happy to send him all the resources that he needs to get this issue correctly. One, they are legal the minute that they apply for asylum. They become legal immigrant applicants, period. They're no longer illegal. That is our laws. That's what Congress passed. Like it or not, that is a fact. Two, they are hard workers who will work hard, who will get a work permit if they were approved, and will contribute to labor. There, some of them will go to school. Some of them will go to colleges. Some of them will become doctors. Some of them will become engineers. But even if they never become doctors or engineers, our houses are built with immigrant labor. Our fruit is picked by immigrant labor. Our roads are built by immigrant labor. And those are facts. Three, they don't suck anything because they do not qualify for Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security or any of our social programs. Their kids might, and the majority of them do not use it, but no adult will benefit from our social programs, not even when they get their green cards and while they're paying their taxes. They only do so after they become an American citizen. And to become American citizen, they would have to learn the language and take a test. They'd have to learn the political history and civics and take a test. They will have to have no crime ever committed in order to pass. It's a long process, and they would have done it all legally if they are approved. If they are not approved, then they will be denied and should be deported. And if they're not deported at that point because they were denied asylum, it's shameful on the administration that doesn't deport them because the laws allow them to do so. So there's a lot of misinformation on the subject, my friend, and I would encourage you to stop listening to Fox News and just listening to the negative.